Happy hump day, everybody. Oh, yeah. Bats right off the top. Here we go. Welcome in. Mean Streets live on Game Plus Network here on our FTN Network YouTube page. Chris Meany here with you. Welcome in. Appreciate you guys hanging out here today. I just finished the show with Jake Seeley, and I guess my camera was just not where it needed to be. Headroom absolutely cut off. We'll make it through the day, I do believe. We have Jim Saunas on the show from Number Fire, one of my favorite guys in the industry. Those over at Anthem Sports and Entertainment, when we used to work together in the office in Toronto, we used to have Jim on the show all the time, and he was one of our favorite guests. He's just like the nicest guy, I think, in the world, very intelligent, of course, and he's a big Minnesota Vikings guy. I think we previewed the Vikings a while ago. It's been some time, so I'm looking forward to chopping it up with Jim about the Vikings, right? New offensive coordinator, new head coach, Kevin O'Connell in there, and you know, we're going to talk about the Vikings, maybe more free wide receiver sets for this squad this year. Delvin Cook, maybe we'll get some thoughts on Alexander Mattison. Irv Smith, I know, is a guy that we're definitely going to hit up and we're going to talk a lot about here with Jim Saunas. There's a handful of games around the diamond happening pretty early here this afternoon, so make sure you get those fantasy baseball lineups set. Jim and I will look at the late slate in MLB. Maybe we'll have a pick or two. I will have a couple MLB picks on this show a little bit later on, and maybe we'll get a DFS play out of him, because we have Carlos Rodon and Max Scherzer going not toe-to-toe, head-to-head, but the two highest-priced pitchers on the board here this evening. So I'm going to ask if he has a preference between the two pitchers, and we can have a bit of an MLB conversation. Hopefully the picks go as well as yesterday. That's right. You know, we hold ourselves accountable in this show. When we get it wrong, we got bats. And when we get it right, we pat ourselves in the back a little bit. Ooh, nice. Bats on the show here today. You got the Prize Picks Scan Me code over there. Lots of great stuff happening at FTN. This is an exciting time of the year, right? It's week two preseason happening this weekend, and before you know it, it's just going to be NFL all the time, MLB playoffs, you know, the bright lights under in October, and bats all day, I think. And then you got NHL, NBA happening in October as well, and, you know, college sports, like it's almost here. It's a great time to be a sports fan. And I want to give a shout out to Lauren Carpenter, one of our newest FTN members, and she is going to have I don't know if we've officially launched this or not, we've told anybody about it, but she's going to have her own Prize Picks segment teeing up some Thursday Night Football or Monday Night Football, whatever she chooses. But she has a video already over at FTNnetwork.com. We've been running some Prize Picks videos. Yesterday I did one on Robbie Ray over 7.5 strikeouts. We got that. And then Vlad Guerrero Jr. over 1.5 total bases. We actually got the push on Steele. We needed him to have 6 Ks. He got 5. But nonetheless, we are doing these videos for free every day over at roughly every day. And I think once we get into it, now we're getting to all the sports. Like, we've just really been doing MLB and some NFL futures and things like that. But once we get here in October, it's just going to be, you know, a little bit of college. We got Walter Riddell, who covers the CFL, Canadian Football League. That's right. He's got, you know, Prize Picks available. Prize Picks covers it all. So you can mix and match across all the sports. We'll have some college sports in there, some NHL, some MLB, some NBA, of course, NFL. But Lauren has a video which is live. Go check that out over at FTN Network. You're watching here live. Deesh is in the house. Just missed All in Football, watching that right after this. A great conversation with Jake Seeley this morning on a couple things, and you can catch All in Football on Game Plus Network Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and Jake goes live at 11 in the morning. I join him on Mondays, Lauren joins him on Tuesdays, and I'll be with him on Wednesdays, and throughout the season, Monday will be like a waiver wire, Tuesday will be more of a waiver wire show, but Monday's kind of like a recap, it's like a half hour show, and then Tuesday will be, you know, really diving into waiver wire pickups and rankings and things like that. And then Thursday, Jake will present his rankings, then I'll pick them apart and I'll tell them how awful they are, and we'll try to make some adjustments on the show. He's the number two ranker last year. Number two, though. You know who number one was? Jeff Ratcliffe. Sorry, Jake. Number two. Jake's finished number one multiple times. He's okay with it. Diehard MMA podcast in the house, Skull. So are you Vikings fans? It's nice. We're going to have that Vikings convo. Jim's going to join us here in a couple minutes, and it should be fun. But yeah, yesterday was decent in terms of MLB. We did get some things right. Red Sox, you know, finally got a W. George, they beat up on the lowly Pittsburgh Pirates. As I mentioned, we had Robbie Ray over 7.5 strikeouts. We also had him over 1.5 walks, and we had Sean Manaea over 5.5 strikeouts. Yesterday was a pretty good day. Hopefully we can continue here. We do have a sharp mind, and Jim Sonnis from Number Fire joining us in just a few minutes. A couple things. You saw the Vikings preview and he jumped right in. Absolutely. You have any questions, leave them there. Jim's a guy that is super in tune, just like yourself, I'm sure, with the Minnesota Vikings. A couple things I wanted to say off the top. Looks like Mecole Hardman was carted off practice today with a leg injury. That is fresh. This is something that I'm just seeing. Mike Trout could return to the lineup before the end of the week. And then Derwin James, a record-setting deal. I like the guy. He's some issues maybe staying healthy, but man, when he is healthy, he is one of the best in the game. And he is a stud. You look at this Chargers roster on paper, it is one of the best rosters in the NFL. We'll see if they can hold it together this season and stay healthy. If you're looking for that FTN fantasy draft guide, you can use the promo code MEANIE, save yourself 20%. As I mentioned, Ratcliffe, his rankings are there. My rankings are there. We got high stakes players in Nelson Susan, Vlad Sedler, doing live streams every week, Friday night. They got another one here this evening with Michael Govier. He's going to host it. He's done a fantastic job hosting them. Super sharp dude. Happy to have him on the squad as well. We got all kinds of content. You see the 40 plus tools, cheat sheets from Jeff Ratcliffe, half point, standard, full point, super flex, tight end premium, whatever it is that you play in those leagues. And we'll be with you through the entire season. In fact, you see 12 months of fantasy football. So, I mean, if you get it now, you're going to get next year's kit as well and all the goods that comes with it. You got the rookie scouting guide in there, $99.99, but you'll save yourself 20% using that promo code MEANIE. And speaking of tools, you see 40 plus tools. We'll do this quickly before we bring in Jim, and I'll bring this back up. We've been doing this with the target share and the ADOT leaders and air yards and things like that. So let's bring this up quickly. The catchable balls. Yeah. Catchable ball percentage leaders. So you see the note there on the bottom, percentage of targets that were a catchable ball. So this is mostly, this is really on the quarterback. It's fitting that ball in to tight windows, you know, not having to like dive to catch or having a defense, you know, a defender's hand kind of in the way. Of course you see Dalton Schultz there up at the top. So, you know, credit to Dak Prescott, who has been one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the league since he entered. But my big takeaway here, and I'll actually bring this up with Jim to see what he thinks as well, but my big takeaway are the Miami guys, right? Mike Gesicki, number 7, Jalen Waddle, number 8. Everyone likes to crap all over Tua Tagovailoa, but the guy's accurate. He's an accurate passer. He can't throw the ball deep down the field. I don't know. He had a 50% completion rate of balls thrown at least 20 yards down the field. So he can throw the ball down the field. He can do it accurately. But the problem is he only had 26 attempts of 20 yards down the field. So he was 13 for 26. So he's not inside the top 10 in terms of leaders when it comes to attempts, but accuracy, he is. Will he throw the ball more deep down the field with Tyreek Hill on the squad? I think he will. I don't think it's going to be, that's it. Like Tyreek Hill's only going to get deep passes and that's it. Like he's a guy that can play in the slot and, you know, short yardage throws, just like Mike, you know, McDaniel moving over from San Fran to Miami. The offense may run very similar, get the ball in into Waddle and Hill's hands and, you know, Chase Edmonds and watch these guys go. But, you know, credit to the quarterbacks really on this list. And you see two Cincy guys in there as well, and T. Higgins and Jamar Chase. So, you know, Joe Burrow, right? Very accurate. Derek Carr, what we know about Derek Carr over the past few years, a very, very accurate quarterback. Hunter Renfrow in the slot. So credit to some of these quarterbacks, Amon-Ra St. Brown, some of these guys, right? They're slot wide receivers, so it's a little bit easier. Christian Kirk played a little bit outside, but Kupp outside as well, but sometimes in the slot, Godwin in the slot, and then Amon-Ra St. Brown, of course, in the slot as well. Okay, that's cool. FTN data, we got a lot of good stuff, a lot of tools, and which, you know, may not mean too much for you heading into this season, but really cool to follow throughout the season. I'll give you guys some sneak peeks as we continue to get closer into week one of the NFL season. Rams and Bills, let's get it on. Jim Sander here next of Number Fire. We will dive into the Minnesota Vikings, talk a lot about Irv Smith, get some MLB stuff for you as well. I got some tight end rankings towards the end of the show, some sleepers, some breakouts, some busts. So a lot of football talk here, and it starts next with Jim Sonnis. Keep it locked. Welcome back in. Mean Streets here live on FTN Network and Game Plus Network, Anthem Sports Entertainment. Chris Meany here as we bring in Jim Sonnis of Number Fire. He's the lead analyst over there covering all the sports. Jim, welcome in, man. It's been some time. How's things going?
It's great, Chris. I mean, like, I'm excited for football season, excited for the NASCAR playoffs just around the corner. We got the FedEx Cup playoffs in full swing. Like, it might be the best point in the sports calendar. Like this month in September might be the best couple of months. So I'm pretty jazzed. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great. And I agree, right? It's a great time to be a sports fan, as I said off the top. And, you know, once you get into September, then it's the race for, you know, MLB playoffs, and hopefully we have some exciting wildcard races, right? With another, you know, squad, three teams on each side. And then, you know, if you're an NBA fan, NHL fan, it's all happening. College sports, it's all happening as well. I'm not really following NASCAR as much as I should. You and I used to do some NASCAR segments before at Anthem Sports Entertainment. Shout out to FNTSY. What's going on in the NASCAR world? Like who's the guy that's really kind of piqued your interest this year? It's like, whoa, he's taking a step forward.
I mean, that's the fun thing is everyone has because they changed the car. So it's been a chaotic year. Like the way that I'll make this short, I promise. But the way the NASCAR playoffs work is each driver who wins a race gets into the postseason as long as there aren't more than 16 winners. But there are two races left. And there have already been 15 winners so far this year. Martin Truex Jr. is third in the playoffs and might miss the playoffs. Ryan Blaney second in the point standings. He might miss the playoffs as well because they don't have wins yet. So we got Watkins Glen and Daytona left. Like, get on board, Chris. You got two races left to watch the run for the playoffs. It's going to be a blast. No NFL yet, You really have no excuses not to be watching NASCAR right now.
I agree. Like I said, Jim follows it all, so at Jim Saunas, if you're looking for some NASCAR info, you can head on over there. And since you mentioned golf, and I don't want to get too much into LIV and PGA, but are you bummed to see some of these guys? Like, has anyone really jumped over that you've like, oh, man, that to me, I'll be honest, like Cam Smith, I don't even know. Like, is this guy officially over there yet? I just don't even know. It's hard to follow the reports, but it does look like he is like heading over there. And to me, that's like the first guy where I've been like, oh man, that stinks.
That'd really be the same for me. Yeah. Losing Cam Smith would stink. Assuming that does wind up happening, which I'm pretty sure it will be. The other one, like, it's just me who's bummed, but like Jason Kokrak, was like always $9,300 on FanDuel every single week. He was like this great ball striker. It's like, okay, cool. I went in doubt, just go to Kokrak. And like, so I'm probably the only person who's bummed about that one, but I am. So I think Cam Smith, realistically, the biggest one so far, the biggest bummer, because like a lot of guys were not in the best form at that time, whether it be the injuries, whatever it may be. Cam Smith was like S tier. So to lose him, that's a pretty big bummer, but like, I love Rory McIlroy. Watching JT is fun. Will Zalatoris. All these guys seem pretty committed to the PGA Tour. So I'm still excited about the future. Just kind of bummed, specifically losing Cam Smith and potentially losing these guys in majors at some point down the road as well.
Yeah, I know, right? That's a topic for another day. I mean, Smith is just so fun to watch. I just feel like he's like a three-tool guy right off the tee, the wedge play, and of course his putter is just so darn hot. There's a lot to like about him. I think he's a good follow on Instagram too. Like there's I don't know if you follow him on the video, he went into one of his bags and he had like 17 Cameron putters and he was just like looking at all of them, like, this one's the best, this one's my favorite, this one, I know with the accent, I'm all about it. So
he's doing like the Carlos Gomez bat sniff on each putter to like see which one works, you know? Yeah
and get this Scotty Cameron. It's like, okay, maybe we can win some bets here and around the diamond so we can get some people some Scotties. Okay, before we get into the Vikings, I definitely want to talk Vikings, and maybe if you can hang around for another segment, we can dive into tonight's MLB slate, you know, Scherzer and Rodon on the hill. So see what way you're leaning there in terms of, you know, DFS. There was some news before we came on, Mecole Hardman. Like, I'm not seeing, is it official that this guy was carted off? I think there were some reports that I was doing the show with Jake and somebody had jumped into the chat and said that Field Yates had said something about him being carted off, and Juju didn't practice here today. And we know that Tyreek Hill is not on the squad. It's a lot of targets, right? Gone from the squad. They bring in MVS. Sky Moore seems to be, you know, just, you know, on his way to the sky, like sky's the limit for him. And I think people will get a little bit more excited about him if, you know, unfortunately, Mecole Hardman's going to be out for a little bit. What do you make of this, you know, Chiefs passing attack? And if he is done for the season, Hardman, is it MBS that gets that spike? Like, if you're choosing, because they're going pretty close next to each other. Like, who do you think has the better season, rookie Sky Moore or the boomer bust guy in MVS that we've seen in Green Bay over the past couple of years?
Yeah, I think it was kind of MVS and Juju to begin with. And this just kind of solidifies that. You know, Hardman, it seemed like based on the way he was being used in training camp in the preseason, wasn't going to be moving to that Tyreek Hill role some people had expected. So to me, it kind of doesn't change things too much other than maybe making the path to playing time a bit more obvious for Sky Moore. But I still think that the guys you want to get to are Juju Smith-Schuster and MVS. And this is like kind of anecdotal, but it seems like the Chiefs purposely went out this year and got big-bodied receivers. Because you look back to last year when they were struggling with the two-eye stuff, part of that was because they couldn't run the football. But if you got put out guys like there, like MVS and Juju Smith-Schuster, who have big bodies and can block, that kind of opens up a lot more in the offense. So I was into them because I thought that, you know, looking at, you know, trying to project out snap rates, I thought Juju and MVS would be on the field pretty much every play. So those are the primary guys I was into to begin with. Maybe it's just confirmation bias, you know, seeing this, but I think that it does line up well. I know MVS wasn't consistent despite having Aaron Rodgers in the past. So we can't like get super jazzed about an offensive change for him, but he had times where he spiked and he was playing alongside Davante Adams for a lot of that. And there's not really a Davante Adams here. Maybe Travis Kelce kind of counts in that regard, but I do think that MVS's upside is better than build, and he's got a pretty solid floor as well. So obviously Juju's the number one. I think that that kind of has become clear throughout camp, but I think MVS is underrated with where he's going right now based on, I think he'll just be on the field a lot based on the scheme fit he seems to be for what the Chiefs want to do right now. And based on the fact he'll get deep balls, you don't need a lot of volume to pay off. You're getting work down the field. I think that's a good thing for him for sure.
Yeah, one of the highest ADOTs, very boomer bust, you know, playing DFS last year, right? If you hit on him, you were really well on your way. I was looking forward to seeing how they were going to run practices today with no Juju, because I agree with you, like Juju, MVS, like those seem to be the guys. And if they're going to do some two wide receiver sets, who is going to get it? Was it going to be Hardman or was it going to be Sky? Like, how are they going to use Sky in that situation? But now with Hardman out, I think it does, you know, I don't think it does anything for me either, but it solidifies like MVS is like kind of locked into that role. And I don't know, like he didn't seem to be on the same page at times last year with Aaron Rodgers. I swear this isn't a Chiefs preview, dude, but since like we're talking about them, Pacheco's another guy that's jumping up draft boards. Ronald Jones like could be an afterthought in this offense in a couple weeks. I guess I'll just ask you this, like CEH, in or out on, if you're drafting this weekend, how far does he have to fall for you to kind of pull the trigger on him? Or are you even in on him? Or maybe you are. Maybe you're fine, comfortable drafting him as like RB 24, 25.
He doesn't fall at all for me. I think that's actually a really good spot to get him, because you look at the way this is broken down in camp. Like, I'm excited about Isaiah Pacheco. I think that like what the aspect he could bring to this offense is pretty enticing. But I think the bigger takeaway is that he's the guy who has emerged behind Clyde Edwards-Helaire, which means that Ronald Jones did not. Ronald Jones is the guy who I thought was the biggest threat to CEH, which to me says they probably feel pretty good about CEH being that lead guy. So not just for season long, but Chris, I'm kind of looking ahead. Week one, we get Cardinals versus Chiefs, daily fantasy, get some Kyler, James Conner, CEH, Travis Kelce game stacks. I'm into it. Like, I'm not trying to look ahead to DFS now on August 17th, but I've already been slacking people. Like, people here at Numberphar are like, hey guys, like, can we get this popping? Because I'm pretty excited about that. So I like CEH a lot. I'll draft Pacheco too, but I think that like to me, it just kind of solidifies CEH as being kind of fun despite burning me every single year so far.
Of course, right? We see the upside, right? And when he was drafted, there's comparisons to Brian Westbrook and there's Andy Reid and how he utilizes his running backs. I see the appeal, and I do agree with you. I think, you know, falling in that range, and he's even falling even further than that too. So, you know, you could potentially get yourself a pretty good draft discount. One more here before we get you out. You're not gonna have any Hollywood in those stacks or what? No Marquise Brown? No.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's tough to get acclimated with a new offense, especially dealing with some off the field stuff. Like, that's kind of annoying.
Yeah,
so
no kidding.
I think for me, I've gotten really into the past couple of years, like non-receiver game stacks. Like, you should always stack receivers in games because you see a lot of imperfect lineups, see a lot of, you know, opposing wide receivers in the same game making imperfect lineups, but like, if I could just stack up a game and still have my receiver slots available to stack another game, just kind of effectively load up on two separate games and just have that be like my full lineup, I'm kind of into it. I probably should have gotten Mahomes over Kyler, given that there's no DeAndre Hopkins, but we'll amend that right now. Mahomes, CEH, Kelce, James Conner on the bring back. Just guaranteed victory in week one.
There you go. Here we are. August 17th. You already got your lineup set, guys. You don't need to do any more research. Week one, we have you set here. Jim is all over it. We might have to save Vikings for the next segment, actually. Just want to keep the balance of the show, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Maybe one more back here. Why not? Like, Antonio Gibson's in the news, right? Antonio Gibson, you know, last year was looking like he wasn't going to return value. And then towards the end of last season, he really got all those touches. He got some goal line work. and he battled through an injury then. But for me, it was really kind of frustrating to watch how they used him because, you know, wide receiver converted running back. Sometimes they'd line him out wide, but then he wouldn't be on the field in third down situations all that much. And then 2 minute drill, they clearly love JD McKissic and they liked him enough to bring him back. It looked like he was going to be gone to Buffalo. They said, no, like come back. And Brian Robinson's a guy that they drafted. He could steal some first down, second down work and goal line work. And we kind of saw that right away. I know it was just one preseason game, but Gibson fumbled. And then he was running with the second team offense and Robinson was running with the first team offense a little bit. He had a short yardage touchdown. And yesterday in practice, you know, Ron Rivera says, you know, he's got this stutter step that he kind of needs to, you know, get rid of. I'm paraphrasing, gets him into trouble. The fumble gets him into trouble. Then today he's, you know, working with the special teams and second and third team offense. You know, part of returning punts could be, you know, working on protecting the rock as well. But interesting to see him kind of used that way. Now in best ball leagues, I'm seeing him go as high as pick 80, low as pick 80, 81, 82. Like that's, you know, last month he was roughly RB 20. Now he's falling outside RB 30. Does that create a buying window for you? Are you in on taking, you know, a shot at that point? Or do you have legitimate concerns on the potential usage of this guy this year?
I think that if you're talking about usage in terms of like his carry rate, like his carry share for the team will probably still be okay because like, he's a talented guy. You know, I think that he'll still wind up getting a decent amount of work, but it's not going to be the kind of work that you want. That's the key thing for me. I want goal line work. I want targets. Those are the high value chances you can get as a running back. And we've already seen, you know, you mentioned McKissic, like that's going to take away from his passing game work. They've mentioned Robinson as being a goal line back. Those are the two biggest things that I want out of my running back. And there's a chance that he doesn't get either, which means it'll be a lot of hollow usage. Like this is a big throwback, but remember like Amir Abdullah, I think he was either a rookie or a second year guy with the Lions. And he would get like a lot of early down work. He'd get you like 14 carries per game, but nothing else. Like, what's the upside there? He needs to bust off a long touchdown in order to get you double digit points even. So his cost is coming down, but it's hard to envision a path to upside if he's not going to get either passing game work or goal line work. And that's kind of where I hesitate a lot because I want to have a path to preferably both of those. And I think there are some guys going near him who have a path to both. So I'd rather just not take him. I'd rather just let someone else take him despite the decreased cost because it's just he's missing out on the key touches, going to get some volume, but it's pretty hollow volume with the kind that he's getting.
Yeah, and as a rookie, I mean, he came on really strong towards the end of the season as a rookie. I think like 33% of his fantasy points came in two starts against the Giants, but he was getting all that goal line work and he was finding the end zone, to your point, right? If he's going to get 14 carries for, I don't know, 60 yards, at least he was getting the goal line work and he can find, you know, the back of the end zone without getting those, you know, those receptions. But now with that big body back in Robinson, you know, if the touches are kind of split, I think that is pretty concerning. I'm out. I'm a little hesitant. And there is something here from Mike Fields in the way. Can I just say that Alvin Kamara value, right? I guess the whole thing with Kamara was, you know, some off-field stuff and some suspension potentially. It sounds like maybe, I don't know. I don't want to get into it too much because I just don't know, Jim. Like, is he going to get suspended? It sounds there was a report the other day. It looks like he won't get suspended this year. So, you know, you've been able to get him in the third or the fourth round. I don't know if you're going to be able to get him in the third or the fourth round this weekend. I guess just yes or no. You draft Kamara?
Yeah.
You pass.
No, I think so. I think that where he's currently going is fine by me just because like he's gotten good work with Jameis when he was with him last year. I think this offense is underrated is what I would say. It's a better infrastructure than what Jameis had last year around him. So I actually just don't mind this offense and Kamara should have a pretty good role in it. So I do like Kamara where he's currently going. Obviously there's risk, but personally I'm okay with risk if it comes with a massive ceiling, and Kamara definitely does have that as he's demonstrated throughout his entire career. And I think that should be in place once again this year.
Love it. I knew that I could just throw names at you and you could just hit them back like you're playing tennis. I love it too. You go from Marquez Callaway and Tre'Quan Smith to Michael Thomas, Chris Olave, and Jarvis Landry. I don't know if there's a bigger upgrade. No. From another team, like for a quarterback, for Jameis to have those weapons this season. So a very, very cheap stack, and I agree, very underrated. I swear we're going to get to the Vikings. Hang on for 2 minutes. We'll break, and we'll dive into those Minnesota Vikings. Lots to get to here with Jim Saunders, Keeper Locked. Welcome back in. Chris Meany with Jim Saunas of Number Fire. We are here now to preview the Minnesota Vikings. Let's take a look at their NFL win totals and some odds here. We have 8.5. You can get 7.5 at -335 if you wanted to go down that route. But actually, a lot of the 8.5s are kind of gone. I'm seeing DraftKings is hanging a 9 at -125. PointsBet a 9 at +110. FanDuel at 9.5 at +105. You see the record last year, 8-9. +300 to win the NFC North. We did this a couple months ago. I think this has come down a little bit, Jim. Like +270 Unibet is the best I'm seeing. 20-1 to win the conference and long shots here to win the Super Bowl. 50-1 you can still get to win the Super Bowl. Most books have 40-1, and then I see a points bet at 28-1 to win the Super Bowl. So there's some value here at 50-1 over at BetMGM. Okay, let's just talk about them from a whole before we get into some of their weapons. Kevin O'Connell comes over, right? You got an offensive-minded head coach here in Minnesota. Reasons to be optimistic and excited about the offense. What do you think? How do you think the offense is going to run? Do you think it's going to be similar to, you know, what he did in LA with a lot of three wide receiver sets?
Yeah, I would expect something of that nature, in part because they have the personnel to do that with the guys they've got there. I think that they kind of proved last year they've got three legit receivers who can operate pretty well. I mean, they might not be world beaters beyond Justin Jefferson, but it's good enough. So I'm expecting the offense to be decently efficient. You were talking about the win total before. I've got them at 9.9 wins. I might not be the right person to discuss that because last year was like a consistent theme. Every freaking week, my model would say to bet the Vikings, and I would just like beat my head against the wall. I was like, stop it. Like, just please stop it. And like, they were 8-6 against the spread in those games. So like, you know, whatever, the model can, you know, have that victory for it. But I was very annoyed that it happened every single week. So I wasn't really shocked when I ran my numbers and saw they came out at 9.9 wins. So I was on this over a while ago. I think that where it's at right now, if it's at 9, I think that with the model still being above it, maybe you could talk yourself into it over, but I would have rather have gotten in at the other number and just stood pat and just avoid, give more room for error for models that's been too high on them for a long time. The reason it's too high on them, though, is because it does project them for pretty high passing efficiency. And I'm not opposed to that. I mean, Irv Smith is a big re-addition to this offense. Kirk Cousins, despite his flaws, can generate an efficient offense, and passing efficiency is the biggest part of my model. So I wish it were lower on them personally. It makes me uncomfortable. I'm annoyed with having to bet them constantly, but I get why it's there. I can't push back totally. The defense, bigger question marks there, specifically at corner, but I mean, I don't know. I think that directionally the model's probably right, even if it's a bit too aggressive in going that way.
It seems like they've been trying to fix, you know, the secondary, drafting lots of corners over the past little bit too. So at least they're trying to address that hole. Yeah, I think that they can win 10 games. I think they can get into the playoffs as a wall. Like the NFC is just so weak this year. Like I feel like maybe they don't catch the Packers this year, but we could see Green Bay take a step back. And, you know, geez, if one of the wide receivers, like if Lazard doesn't take that step forward, then right, there's so many question marks at the wide receiver position. It will be a Green Bay team relying on their defense and, you know, a heavy run game between Jones and Dillon. But in terms for Minnesota, I just felt like, well, you said you're frustrated. You must have been, yeah, it was crazy the way that they finished games last year. Like how many, I don't know off the top of my head, but a lot of walk-off losses. Like it seemed like Kirk Cousins marched them down the field to get the victory, but there was like 30 seconds left on the clock, and it happened a couple times last year.
And then a couple wins that way too. We're like, I think, yeah, I don't remember what game it was, but like, yeah, like they won, I think, the Carolina game in overtime. They had the Pittsburgh game on Thursday night. I was on a flight. I bet them. I think it was like -6.5 or something like that, or whatever it was. And they were up like 21 points when I got in the plane. I was like, cool, easy win, let's go. And then they coughed up the entire lead. I think they were like about to lose, but by the time I got off the plane, they had already covered again. So I never got to experience the awful rush there. So my negative sentiment towards the Vikings from a betting perspective doesn't count almost losing that spread bet against the Steelers on Thursday night. So, you know, it could have been even worse than it was from a mental health perspective in terms of betting this team. But I think that, like, when you look at the guys they have in place, they're going to have an efficient offense that's going to put them in a good spot. You mentioned Green Bay and potentially lending itself towards some upside for this Vikings team. I think that if I'm betting them in the futures market, I want to stay in low upside markets, like upside markets where I don't need them to beast out for me to cash. But that's why I like the win total market the most, because I kind of view them as being a non-volatile team. They're volatile, but just not in this way. They were more volatile when it was Kirk Cousins, Mike Zimmer thing, but I just don't see them as having a path to big upside, but I also think they have a good floor. So for me, I'm staying away from division futures, staying away from Super Bowl futures, NFC futures, because I just don't think they can top the upside of every other team in the NFC. But if you're talking about getting me 9.5 wins, I think they can do that. So to me, I want to live in those more lower upside markets in order to account for, I think, the small range of outcomes this team has.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, they're -110 to make the playoffs. You figure they get in?
I think they probably battle with
the Saints, the Eagles for a wild card spot.
I think it's a fair number. I have them like a half win above Philly, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah, I have Philly at 9.5, Minnesota at 9.9. So they should be right in that range. They're going to be fighting with all the NFC West teams as well. They'll be in that mix. So the wild card spots in the NFC are not super easy, and I'm expecting them to battle for that because I do have Green Bay pretty decently above them still. But I think -110 is probably a very fair number given the NFC is kind of a bit of a top-heavy conference.
Yeah, it really is. Just looking at their schedule again, is I don't want to bring back any more bad memories from you. But yeah, I mean, a lot of overtime games here, like 8 games decided within like a touchdown as well. Started the season against the Bengals, overtime loss, lost to Arizona week 2 by a point. Detroit, I think, was one of those games that they came back and they won by 2. And then the overtime game that you mentioned to Carolina, Baltimore overtime loss. It was a lot of tight games for them last season, and just taking a sneak peek at their schedule this year too. I mean, those are going to be key games for them against the Eagles, against the Saints, but certainly a lot of winnable games inside the NFC East, right? Getting Washington, getting the Giants, getting Chicago a couple times, Detroit a couple times. So it should be highly entertaining. Got Buffalo, Dallas on the schedule, so some tough ones in there as well. The Colts should be a true test for Minnesota. Let's get into some of their weapons. Tyler, you want to bring up the board? This is from NFFC, just over the last 2 months. So we've seen a little bit of movement from some players. Certainly KJ Osborne has jumped up a little bit more since this board was made. Adam Thielen, I think, is just a terrific value. The guy just scores touchdowns. He's not going to score as many touchdowns this year. He just scores touchdowns, man. That's what he does. He's been a red zone threat for years now, and certainly the trust there of Kirk Cousins, Dalvin Cook, Alexander Mattison, and Kirk Cousins, I think, is undervalued as well. I think he finished like quarterback 11 last year, and now we're talking about a pass-happy offense here. I guess I'll just ask you, Jefferson. There's a lot of Jefferson or Cup debates lately. I've seen Jefferson actually go 1 overall in high stakes leagues. I've seen him a couple times go ahead of Cup. I haven't seen him fall outside of wide receiver 3. Some people really like Jamar Chase, of course, his former teammate from LSU. I know we're splitting hairs here, but is it Jefferson or Cup to you if you had the choice?
I mean, I don't really know. It's tough because like I kind of go back and forth. I always want to rank Jefferson higher, but I wind up taking Cup if I'm forced to choose between the two. I think the bigger takeaway is that even with Cooper Cup breaking records last year, even with him destroying worlds and all that stuff, I think that Jefferson is definitely in that tier. And I think that is an actionable takeaway where if you feel really good about Cooper Cup, just take Cooper Cup. That's fine. But I also think that you can defend taking Jefferson higher. So it's a very waffly answer, and I know that, but I do think it is an actionable takeaway that Jefferson is justifiably in that tier. And to me, it's a tier of 4. You got McCaffrey up there, you got Jonathan Taylor, Cup, and Jefferson. I think that those are the top 4 to me. And I think those 4 are in a tier by themselves before things fall off to that. And I think that Jefferson does deserve to be in that tier because of the pass heavier offense that you mentioned, because he's pretty freaking good, pretty efficient quarterback with whom he has a rapport. I think all that stuff does add up to him being in that top 4 tier.
I guess Maurice Jones-Drew doesn't think so, because he tweeted yesterday his top 10 pass catching combos for the season. I don't know if you saw this. Number 1, Burrow and Chase. Number 2, Allen and Diggs. 3, Stafford Cup, Carr Adams, Mahomes, Kelsey, Brady Evans, Prescott Lamb. At 8 was Herbert Allen. 9 was Murray Hopkins. Number 10 is Jameis Winston and Michael Thomas, who have 0 combined yards together in the NFL. And Kirk Cousins and Jefferson only have, 3,000 in the first 2 years together? So I don't know. Maybe Jones-Drew is sleeping a little bit on Justin Jefferson. Talk to me about the other weapons. Are you in on Osborne as a sleeper? Do you like the value for Adams? You talked about this offense being more up-tempo. I think there's room for both of these guys to be on fantasy squads and return value.
Yeah, I think so for sure. I think that with Osborne and Irv Smith specifically, I just want low low cost exposure to this offense. I think that's kind of the way I want to play things. I want to get in on this offense without breaking the bank, because Dalvin Cook, Justin Jefferson, I'll take them where they're at for sure. But if I can get access to an offense I expect to be pretty efficient, an offense that should operate the way I want things to operate at a very low cost, I find that super intriguing. So KJ Osborne, you mentioned going pretty late at wide receiver. I'm okay with that. But also Irv Smith, he's dipped down to tight end 18 right now in FanDuel best ball drafts. And wow. I get it, given the thumb injury. It sounds like he should be good to go for week one, but I understand being concerned with injuries and bumping a guy down. But what tight end going in that range does not come with risk? I think the one difference with Irv Smith now versus Irv Smith pre-thumb injury is that it increases the odds that he busts. And that matters. You know, a bust rate does matter for sure, but his ceiling is still the exact same that it was. And that's what I care about at that point in the draft. So to me, I think if I'm getting exposure to this offense late, I want to go via Irv Smith. Yes, it is riskier now. Like I said, the odds that things bust are now higher than they were before. But I think it's a worthwhile trade-off given the fact that he does still have that upside. He gets me access to this offense. He fills at that point in the draft, a pretty wretched position. So I think if I'm getting late exposure, I don't mind KJ Osborne. I'll get him too. But I think to me, Irv Smith is the optimal way to get exposure to this offense after Dalvin Cook and Justin Jefferson.
I think that's terrific value for Irv Smith. Quickly on the way out, we know Dalvin Cook is a beast. He's awesome. If you don't get Cook, are you making Madison a priority? Are you the type that, I mean, it's just a, I think at that point, if you draft Cook, I think it's a waste to also pick Madison for where he's going. Like, you just want to shoot for upside. Like, it's tough to handcuff a back that's not as cheap as opposed to like a Deontay Foreman, you know, if you get CMC. If you don't get Cook, would you take the shot on Madison, or is it just too rich for your blood for a backup running back that we haven't seen him really be involved in the offense unless Cook is hurt?
And it's a backup running back who has some competition now. Kenny Nwangwu has played pretty well during the preseason. Like, that's a concern to me. Like, I don't know if it's just I follow too many people on Vikings Twitter, but like, there's a lot of like, hey, we should trade Madison to like open up room for these other guys. Yeah. I'm not sure what you get for Madison, but seems like they're pretty into that idea. And like, as a guy who's not like super into running backs, like, yeah, why not? Let's do it. So I don't think I go at Madison. I think that if he does move into a larger role, if Cook were to get hurt, I would expect him to split some time with those guys. Nwangwu's got way more burst than Madison has. So I would be very wary of that. I don't think Madison, with where he's currently going, gives me any real pause about not being in on him.
Good call. Trade him. Get what you can. Right? Just a running back. It's a backup running back. All right, quick break, Jim. One more segment, if you don't mind. We'll decide between Scherzer or Rodon in the MLB DFS world for this evening. Keep her locked. Seven games on the MLB slate for 7 Eastern over at FanDuel. We have Max Scherzer on the bump in Atlanta to take on the Braves, 11-5, and they have Carlos Rodon at home to take on the Arizona Diamondbacks. He's 10-7. What are you doing between these two studs? You spending up for Max, or you're taking a little bit of a price discount on Carlos? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it depends a lot on the contest type you're playing in, because for cash games, I want Rodon. That matchup is pretty sick. He did go 110 pitches last time out, so no concerns around workload for him, despite the fact the Giants not super in the playoff hunt. Like, they still have like a 5 or 6% shot to go. So like, you know, they're still in the hunt. I had some concerns entering last week that maybe they'd scale back Rodon a bit as we get in the stretch run, but they haven't done that yet. So I think to me, pitch count concerns are not there. Facing Arizona, not as lefty heavy as they were earlier on this year in terms of their lineup, but still a good spot for a lefty. So for cash games, I want Rodon, and I do like him there. For single entry tournaments where I want to, like, my overall goal there is to be different without being stupid. And I think that Scherzer allows you to do that, because you look at the betting lines of these two games, we're probably going to see a situation where Rodon winds up coming in with a roster rate that's like a decent amount higher than Max Scherzer's for tonight. Looking at the Mets in this game, -154 favorite, that's still pretty decent, but the Giants tonight -220, and people do care a lot about that. And the team total, opposing team total for Rodon would be very low. So I'd expect Rodon to be the chalk of the night. And that gives you a wiggle room to go with Scherzer's facing a super, super high strikeout team. They're a very good team, very frisky offense, but they will strike out a lot. I am okay with risk if it comes with upside, and Scherzer gets me that. I've got him projected for 8.7 strikeouts tonight. I have Rodon at 7.5. That's a decent little gap. I think that the concerns around opposing matchup, the park, stuff like that would push you towards Rodon for cash games. But for single entry tournaments, again, Scherzer allows you to be different without being dumb. And that's always my goal. So for cash games, I want to go Rodon. For single entry tournaments, give me Scherzer. For multi-entry tournaments, por qué no los dos? We're getting both in there. We're getting a healthy exposure to both. But I think that's kind of the way I want to play things for those guys tonight.
I would have to use that sound. It's different without being dumb. I like that. That's pretty good. And we were talking about playoffs, man. I mean, the Mets with DeGrom healthy, man, what a 1-2 punch to have to face those guys like maybe twice in a series is absolutely that's going to be wild. Man, you're fantastic. I love being able to chop it up with you. Why don't you just take the time to tell people about your work and where they can catch you?
Yeah, we have our betting podcast called Covering the Spread. You can find that wherever you get your podcast. Search for Covering the Spread for that. Our DFS podcast with MLB, PGA, NASCAR, UFC, and NFL just around the corner. That's on the Number Fire Daily Fantasy podcast feed. So betting, DFS, we got it all covered. A lot of it goes up on the FanDuel YouTube page too. So we're kind of all over the place. And then my Twitter is at Jim Saunas too.
Love it. Jim Saunas, Number Fire. Check him out. You will not be disappointed. Good luck to your Vikings this year, sir. We will talk to you soon. Good luck around the diamond. And hang on. We got some MLB picks and we have some tight end rankings. We'll say goodbye to Jim for now. And we will wrap up Mean Streets here on Game Plus Network. Talk to you soon. Welcome back in. I'm going to save tight end rankings for tomorrow, but I am going to talk a little tight ends, some tight ends here with you now and some sleepers, some breakouts, and potentially some busts, right? Yeah, why not? Just some potential busts here. And big names, Darren Waller, TJ Hockenson. Honestly, you know, tried to pick a top five tight end that could bust, and I could see Darren Waller busting. You know, some injuries last year. I actually thought that the Raiders potentially could trade him. I thought that they could move on from him, maybe get something in return. Who knows? It looks like he's going to be part of the squad for sure as we get closer to the season. But adding Davante Adams, who's going to be a target hog, and having Hunter Renfrow inside this offense, you know, I'm a little concerned with, you know, the targets and the volume here. And I've said this before, and I don't want it to fully... Whatever, you can call me crazy all you want. I think that this, you know, offense with Josh McDaniels could run very similar to how it ran in New England, right? And, you know, I've said this before a couple times. If we view Davante Adams as Randy Moss and Hunter Renfrow as Wes Welker, and, you know, they didn't really have an elite tight end on the squad then for those years in New England. It was before really Gronk, you know, exploded. And I just feel like it's tough to really project Darren Waller as a top three tight end for where he's going, top three, top four. I just don't think he's going to return value. And I think there's a lot of moving pieces in Detroit as well with TJ Hockenson. I really like Hockenson. He came on strong last season and then he kind of cooled off. There's been some injuries over the last couple seasons that have been an issue for him, but I just feel like in that range, I think I'm okay with maybe Dallas Goedert. There's a lot going on there as well. But for Goedert and Hockenson, I think Knox is okay. I think I'm just waiting it out a little bit more for a Cole Kmet, for an Irv Smith. We just heard Jim Saunas give some good reasons on Irv Smith. And man, he's falling down draft boards right now due to the thumb injury. There's been some injuries with him over the past couple of seasons. You know, when they moved on from Conklin, you know, you thought we would see, certainly I thought it would see the spike with Irv Smith. It's just been moments, but you know, Kevin O'Connell coming over in a pass happy offense more so than we've seen in years past. I think Irv Smith could break out. And I know this is a trendy breakout trio, right? With Albert O in there as well. But the fact that Tim Patrick went down, Albert O could be a red zone target. I expect him to be. No Noah Fant on this squad now. A real breakout candidate here for Albert O. And don't ask me to pronounce his last name because I just can't do it. I think I can, but I'm not going to try. Bats. But for Albert O, is it going to be a mismatch, right? He's just a big body. There seems to be a rapport already with Russell Wilson. He's known to utilize some of his tight ends, you know, from Seattle and didn't have a lot of great ones. Of course, Jimmy Graham was a great one, but, you know, Will Disley and you see Gerald Everett there on the right, who had a decent season last year at times with Russell Wilson. I think Gerald Everett is an upgrade over Jared Cook. Jared Cook was getting roughly drafted around tight end 20, which is where Gerald Everett is going. I think that's an upgrade. I think he's a better tight end. I think he's got better hands. I think he's a better red zone target. I think if you waited out at the tight end position or you roll with two tight ends, tight end premium, you could have Gerald Everett as your second tight end. And I think that's a fine target there. Dalton Schultz, I think, is just completely undervalued. How could it be undervalued going as tight end six or seven? Because I have him ranked as a top four tight end. I am really thinking about him, you know, in almost all of my drafts. out of round six or seven. You know, I love Pitts. I love Andrews. I don't think Kelce is worth the pick in the first because I just, in years past, there was a gap between Kelce and everybody else. And Andrews finishes tight end one, and they don't really have anything else going on in Baltimore like Bateman. But after that, there's just a lot of concerns. And in fact, all of their wide receivers in Baltimore have already suffered injuries. I think Bateman was sidelined for a couple weeks, and you know, Duvernay's gone through some things. And my goodness, like Andrews is in line for maybe another close to 1,400 yards and a lot of targets, and especially inside the end zone. He was top five in end zone targets last year. So I just feel like the gap is not as significant. So Andrews and Pitts, I think Kittle I'm passing on, Waller I'm passing on. I would expect Everett to actually have, or excuse me, Schultz have better seasons than those guys. You got Hayden Hurst linked to the Cincy offense. He's probably only a guy that you draft in tight end premium or two tight end leagues. You want a third tight end, you can roll him out there. Njoku, not a lot of competition there. I like Njoku. They finally moved off from Hooper. I know Harrison Bryant's on the squad. A lot of question marks with Devontae Peoples-Jones and David Bell, who I do like the prospect of him. But after that, you know, Njoku and Cooper, these are guys that I expect to have well over a 20% target share. Brevin Jordan, same sort of deal, right? Only battling with Brandon Cooks. I think he is I have a lot of shares of him already in best ball. I have him ranked as a top 20 tight end. He's going around tight end 25, 26. He came on strong, really only saw a handful of games from him, but towards the end of the season, we started to see him as a decent tight end. They also got Leike on the squad, Leike as well, who could be interesting. And then Robert Tonyan, a couple years removed from having a really, really strong season. And again, not a lot going on there in Green Bay. Clearly has the trust of Aaron Rodgers. Could be a red zone threat for Mr. Rodgers. We are going to break Gesicki. There's some reports that he's going to block a lot. I don't think Tua is going to be a guy that drops back a ton. And there's already, you know, two strong wide receivers on that squad. So I think Gesicki in around tight end 13 is a major bust. I would avoid him. We got MLB picks to round out Mean Streets. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back in. Only a couple MLB picks for you. A friendly reminder, MLB picks and props around the diamond coming your way live at 1:30 Eastern over at FTN Network YouTube page. We'll have a couple more picks there for you, and as well as Game Plus Network at 6 Eastern Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So here's a couple picks for you, led by Max Scherzer, over 7.5 strikeouts. You heard it from Jim Saunas. High ceiling, minus 110 over at BetMGM. Best possible price I'm seeing. Use a prop shop to get the best possible odds. The Braves have a really good lineup, but they strike out a ton. They're inside the top five in strikeout percentage. Max Scherzer just faced Atlanta just a few days ago, and he went seven scoreless innings. Only gave up four hits. I got excited there. And he struck out 11 batters, right? He's got 11 K per nine, 126 punchouts in 102 innings. And then George Kirby in there. He's faced the Halos twice, August 6th, six innings, one run, six hits, 8K. And then on June 16th, six innings, two earned runs, and 6K. We were all over Robbie Ray yesterday. The Angels have the highest strikeout rate in baseball. He can give us six strikeouts here. And then the Red Sox. I know it's Rich Hill on the Hill. But the Pirates are no good, and they can't hit lefties. And Rich Hill will probably only give them a couple innings, but I got to take the Red Sox here. Worked out for us yesterday. Decent odds for the much better team, despite an awful bullpen. Other than that, you're on your own. We will talk to you tomorrow. Cheers.